Okay, Rick. So Rick's got a part this morning. He's going to kind of be architecting a little bit, kind of framing things. Amanda, a little bit. Cornelius. Krista. That's right? Okay. Awesome.
Thanks, Sandy. Hi, I'm Rick. I'm one of the elders here. Sean, can we pop that up on the screen? This morning, we're going to read someone else's mail from the Bible. I know you would probably never read anybody else's mail, but we're all going to do that together. There is the book of Philippians in the New Testament is a really interesting letter. And I don't know if you know the backstory. I love backstories. This was a church plant. And whenever you start a church from scratch, you always attract interesting characters into your church. It's sweet. That's what happens. And when Paul did that in, it was a Greek city called Philippi, all kinds of interesting things happened. You can read about it in the book of Acts, but I think one of the first charter members, one of the first people in this church, was a young girl who was a slave, and she had been possessed by evil spirits, and those evil spirits had left. And she had quite a story to tell. And the next to her on the Sunday morning would be sitting this retired Roman army non-commissioned officer. I like to imagine him as a gruff old sergeant, and he was in charge of the local jail, and all his family was there. And then a little further down the row was, or around the circle, was a fairly affluent businesswoman. Her name was Lydia, and she had a bunch of friends there. And it was just a ragtag, interesting group of people that what they had in common was Jesus. And that's really cool. And that's something Luann and I appreciate so much about WCV when we first moved to Winnipeg. Maybe up here? What do you think? Move the mic closer to my mouth. Thank you, Sarah. I love this church. People are so kind. She's trying not to say, "Hey, dimwit, mic close to the mouth." She said, "Please, Rick, speak up." Okay, that's better. More better. So anyway, this church with such diversity and interesting people and interesting backstories, and they all have stories about how Jesus found me, right? If we could take the time, if we had the time, everybody's got an interesting story about how Jesus found me. So Paul writes a letter to encourage his friends, and it's the book of Philippians. And Sean, can you pop that up on the screen for us? Brilliant. Okay. So I'm going to read through it and just comment on it because today we're going to have this is kind of like a family meeting, a family chat around the kitchen table. We used to do that when our kids were little and discuss different, this is where we might do a vacation or here's what we're going to do next. And typically they would say, "Can we do this and that wild thing?" And then we'd very tactfully say, "Well, that's not in the budget." But that's a polite way of saying, "We don't have money for that," but you're trying to say, "Well, that's not in the budget, but we could do this," So we went out for a lot of ice cream instead of Disney World or whatever, but you get the idea. But this is kind of a family meeting, and we just want to hear from different folks. We're not going to be voting on anything or evaluating anything per se. We're just hearing from each other. And then at the end of our time together, Krista's going to spread some papers out all over our gathering space here, and we're going to ask Jesus to speak to us and saying, "Lord, what have you got for us?" And then we're going to write those things down together, okay? But to set the tone, it's really important, and this is what we're going to be, a passage we're going to be living with through the next few weeks of Lent as we get ready for that big party day on Easter Sunday. We're going to be sitting with this passage, okay? So Paul has written this letter to these people that he just loves to bits. I think you can make a pretty good argument. It's kind of his favorite church because so much stuff comes out in this letter to the Philippians. And he says this, "Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, any comfort from his love, If any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of mind. It says, man, if you guys get anything out of following Jesus, make me a proud papa and, you know, be together and love each other and serve each other. Okay, Sean, next. Do nothing. That's a very strong word. Do nothing from selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. Wow, what a challenge. Don't do anything. And check in your mind and check in your spirit. Why am I doing this? Am I doing this for myself? Or am I doing this to serve other people? Okay. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. On our computer at home, we have this little screensaver that pops up random pictures from family history and stuff. And one of my favorite is of our son, Caleb, who's not here, and you probably never met him, so I'll talk about him just to embarrass him. But he's about 4 years old, and he had this plastic tool set. He was very proud. We didn't let him play with power tools until he was old enough to do it. But he imagined himself a carpenter, and he loved to strut around. He would literally take his plastic tools, stuff them into his pants, waistband, and strut around and, you know, pretend he was a macho construction guy. It was really cute, and it's a cute picture. He was imitating what he saw. Was he? Maybe me, not you. I'm not sure, Luann, who he was imitating. But anyway, he was imitating monkey see, monkey do. So we're invited to imitate Jesus. Not strutting around with plastic tools stuffed in our pants, necessarily. But imitating him in his nature, in the way he related, in his relationships, okay? So in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset. Imitate Jesus. Who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage, but rather he made himself nothing by taking the nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. We don't have time to unpack this morning, but Jesus could easily have just stayed, you know, I'm not going to go to earth. No, I'm God. Nobody tells me what to do. I know my rights. I know my rights. That's very important in Canada today, right? I know my rights. Don't step on my rights. I know what I can do. And yet, Jesus willingly laid all that stuff aside. He knew who he was, but he laid all that stuff aside. Okay, Sean. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. This passage from Philippians, some people consider it's maybe an early Christian worship song. But you can see in the movement in the story, it's kind of like down, 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 down. Jesus, being God, he says, all right, I'll go to planet Earth, I'll become human, and I'll become one of them. And he goes down and down, and then he doesn't even show up as a king or anybody really important or a celebrity. You know, he just keeps going down and down and serving the poor and living with us. And then he ends up being killed like a common criminal. I mean, he's really just right at the bottom of the pile, right? He chose to do that. That kind of attitude, that kind of servant attitude is what he is asking of his children together. Not looking out for our own interests, but looking out for the interests of other people. Why? Because he loves us so much. So much. Okay, Sean, next one. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that's above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. So Jesus chooses to go down, 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 down. And then God the Father, you know, pulls him back from the grave on Easter Sunday, and kaboom, he's at the top again, right? Where he should be. So as we go through conversations today, as we talk about Flatlanders, as we talk about the future of our church and where God is leading us, let's try to keep in mind this attitude that we're here to serve each other just like Jesus serves us, okay? And may God give us the grace to hear from each other and hear from him. Okay. Amanda or Jeff, do you know who's... Amanda's going to come and give us kind of an update on flats. Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't want to stand up there, but I have to. Thanks. It's the microphone's fault, right? Okay, I've been asked just to give you a bit of a quick history, because not all of you will really even know, you know, the history of Flatlanders, and I was a bit of a last-minute request, so I don't have a really great presentation here for you, but I have some things that I'll just share quick. I also really appreciate questions, which maybe isn't a great thing to do on a Sunday morning, but just ask questions if you have them. I have like 5 minutes, is that right? Okay, so Flatlanders officially opened its doors in 2007, but prior to that, things like what Flatlanders was hoping to do were happening already, which is part of the reason that it happened. So there were some people that lived in the church sleeping on couches and rugs. Jeff was one of them, and there would be people who needed a place to stay for a night or a week, and that would happen. So I'm sure there's a better way of talking about how Flatlanders really came into existence, but that is part of it. That's a part that I know. The initial vision was to impact the immediate neighborhood. So like a lot of us who were there in the beginning were heavily involved in drop-in, and it felt like, again, this is the way that I'm going to tell the story. Someone else might tell it differently, but one of the needs was a safe place to live. And so that was the initial vision. And that, I think, it looked that way for a few years, but not very many. We actually found it was the model that we had made. It didn't last very long. We had a high turnover of leaders, and the demand on the way that we were doing it just wasn't working for us. Jeff and I were one of those leaders that left maybe 3 years in or something like that. And so we were never coming back. But then we did, and that's a different story. In 2010, we moved back in, and so did a number of other families, which was a very new dynamic for Flatlanders, to have a bunch of families with a bunch of kids, and it changed the way it felt, and that it was good. It was a good thing, but it was also a time for us where we needed to create a new dynamic for like leader relationship. And so part of that was actually paying rent. Leaders didn't pay rent in the beginning. It was just kind of like a service, right? But this kind of helped create a necessary boundary that we're all in this together, though there was still a very obvious hierarchy of leadership, just to be clear. This is also the time we developed more structure. We had an intake process and expectations of what it looks like to live in Flatlanders. You can read those kinds of things on the website, so I won't go through them here. We hired our first administrator at that time and began to apply for grants, and so it kind of became a little more of, I don't know, maybe organizational. It was becoming a more organizational. In this era of Flatlanders, it included a lot of dialogue around the tension between transitional housing and intentional community. So we found at that time that they didn't go together very well, or we were having a hard time figuring it out, because the leaders or the people that would come for the intentional community part of it, we really valued living that way. That's what we wanted to do, and it looked a little different than maybe than the rest of society. Maybe what we were used to, because there's a lot of community living in society, actually. But But then we would do this transitional housing thing. And so this transitional housing term was imposed by the Winnipeg Homelessness and Housing Initiative. And so that's where our grant to build this space came from. And it's not a bad imposition. The idea is great, to provide housing for someone until they are stable and independent. But what we quickly found was that people often didn't want to leave. They found community, which is what we wanted too. And so we just had to figure it out. And the place was built in a way that it didn't really allow for people to stay long term unless they wanted to stay in a really little bedroom, you know? So a lot of things came out of that that I won't get into. Now, we still have the second and the third floor, and I think we have like a 32-bed capacity. I'm just pulling that number out of my head. I'm not sure if it's quite accurate, but there is, I should have written this down. I always have to count how many people live there. There's 12 people living there right now. So, and two live-in leaders who are moving out. So over these last 2 years, we went from a leadership of 4 live-in leaders to 2. And there are many good reasons for the loss of leadership. And so in that time, we have not felt compelled to fill our beds because we need to. There's a lot of conversation we're not going to have right now in this 5 minutes about what it looks like to bring a new person into community. So maybe I'll just skip ahead here to just to give you a little overview. So since 2007. We had 131 people live in Flatlanders, and this is the stats of like longevity, I guess. 65 people between 1 and 2 years, 35 people between 2 and 3 years, that's how long they've lived there, 28 between 3 and 5, and 13 over 5 years. So I don't know, it's just sometimes stats are interesting, sometimes they're not. So any questions? That would be helpful. Well, we say we are, but we are upfront that we don't know what Flatlanders is going to look like in 3 months. So if someone wants to live there, they need to know that it could be short. It could be a short stay. So that's all to say that this process that this church is doing is really important for Flatlanders, because the people that live there now don't actually know if they will live there soon. And that is a really difficult place to be in. Not at this time, no. Yes, yeah. Like the leadership, I mean, this is where I probably shouldn't be the one speaking now, but it's hard to invite leaders to something that we don't know what it looks like in 3 months. So I don't believe that we've really given a formal invitation to this church or beyond here to become leaders, but that is only because, well, what do we want it to look like? What's it going to look like? How do you lead something if you don't know what it looks like? Just gave my husband a look. It's a friendly look, yeah. Yes. Yeah, so this is where maybe I don't know the truth of it, but my understanding is the second floor was a 5-year commitment, which we're way beyond that. And the third floor, I thought, was 10. So I could be wrong about that, but that was my understanding. I don't believe that we have to give them any more reporting. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. So I believe we've fulfilled our commitment to them. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Maybe just one or two, because I probably should give the mic back. Yeah, no, it's too big of a question for here, for sure. But I'll just say, like as the last 2 years have seen a decline in people, this isn't true across the board. Like, not everyone that's there now would agree with this statement, but I would say a good core of the people who live there now have been committed long term. So I'm saying that to say that there, for some people, it really has become a home. And that's because they're willing to live in a really small room. Like, I say that because I don't live in a really small room, and that's what makes it sustainable for my family. But there's more to say that I just won't hear. Thanks. Cornelius is going to come take the mic before too many hard questions. Seb Davis, one more, and I love Dave, so. Thank you. Not that I'm, well, yeah, we're leaving, and so there won't be any leaders. But I believe that they've announced, like, the possibility of a lease, and so hopefully they'll talk about that more today, or maybe I've just said things I'm not supposed to say, so I'm going to get out of here.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Sean, let's go to that other slide, if you don't mind. Okay, good morning. My name is Cornelius. And I just, hey, special shout out to those of you who are kind of visiting here for maybe the first or second time. I do apologize if maybe you were expecting something other than more church family business. But thank you for being here, and thank you for your grace this morning, okay? Just wanted to share with you, again, continuing on this theme, sort of board perspective and leadership perspective regarding our approach and the discernment process regarding the second and third floors here in the church building, okay? Next slide, Sean. Just a great word of communication. I mean, we in the past, hey, we agree we've maybe not been that great at communicating. And it's one of our goals just to have better communication. And so part of this morning is trying to maybe over-communicate and to share with, you know, good intentions of you know, more communication, better communication coming from your leadership team, coming from the board and so forth. And, you know, a great proverb, of course, the word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. So, okay, next slide, Sean. I'm sorry if these are really small, looks very small from the screen, but Flatlanders contribute significantly to the WCV budget, okay? It's a $30,600 annual contribution to the WCV utilities. And what you should know is that to replace that kind of contribution in the events that flats didn't continue because there's no leaders or because of otherwise would require an increase in giving of $43,700. And that's just because the way we do things at our church is that all the money that we take in from offerings, 30% of it we give away, goes into the 30% fund. And then we work with what's left. So $43,700 in giving, take 30% off, that's how you get to $30,600, okay? And just a reminder for everyone, our 2019 budget was $360,000, and that's after about $100,000 of cuts that we went through last year, which I'm sure you won't have forgotten. Our 2019 income was about $352,000, and there is precious little left to cut in our budget. So from a board perspective and a leadership perspective, we can't allow space to become vacant and unused. That would be really concerning for us. Next. So the board of directors' role, of course, we have a fiduciary duty to WCV, its success, survival, and financial viability, of course, and the fulfillment of its purposes. So with respect to this instance, knowing that we have no more leaders at the end of June, and something needs to be done, our role is to help find options, evaluate and discern options, recommend an option, and see through implementation of chosen options. So what's happened in the last few months? So here's the big update. In December, we were approached by Miller Bible College about interest in leasing or sub-renting most or all of the second and third floors of WCV. Other organizations have been interested in leasing space from us before, but nothing's ever materialized. Other ideas and other options about a refreshed version of housing were also proposed. Those would require review and discernment as well. But on January 14th, the board of directors received a formal memorandum of understanding from Miller Bible College specifically to lease the entire second and third floor. So something like actually hard and in writing and formal. And their initial timeline to either accept or reject their proposal was February 29th. So what was that offer? That offer was for those floors, with the exception of all kids' areas on the second floor, to remain available to WCV on Sundays. They were looking for, you know, 1 year first off term, and then if mutually agreeable, a 5 year extension, and again, if mutually agreeable, another 5 years. And the rental rate they proposed to pay WCV was $300,000 per year with price escalations after 5 years. And they were looking for an acceptance timeline at the end of February. Okay? So just a note, this is what was offered, like it hasn't been negotiated or tweaked or counteroffered or anything like that. Okay? So what happened since then, and what has been our process and discernment? What does that look like? We got a formal offer on January 14th, and the board immediately involved the elders and the pastors very next day, and we began a formal prayer and discernment process, fully engaging the leadership team. We invited the congregation to pray into the future of Flatlanders as well. We had our first sort of LT prayer meeting on January 20th. We got the prayer oversight team involved to pray regarding the space, and the leadership team and the prayer oversight team did sort of like a prayer walkthrough of the church. We did that on January 26th, and again, our prayer at the time was specifically focused around the questions of, God, what would you have for Flatlanders? What do you have for us here in this space? What do you have for us here at Maine and Sutherland? And again, BOD meeting to evaluate options, this one and others. And then again, the congregation, all of you, were invited to pray into the possibility of a lease to a Bible school, and that happened on February 2nd. Elders did further processing themselves, the board as well, and we had a big LT meeting to discuss this on February 24th. Okay, and then further due diligence, we've met ourselves with Miller College as well, on the 28th. Okay, Sean? There's other options. Okay, there's lots of options. Some of them that we looked at, I mean, of course, there's just finding new leaders. Finding new leaders from inside the church. There's a bit of disagreement on sort of how good or bad of an effort there's been in the last 2 years to find new leaders. But anyways, that's definitely an option. Find new leaders from outside of WCV or even outside of the vineyard. That's an option. Hiring a paid director and leader to run something that could look similar to what Flatlanders looks like now or continuation is an option. Employing a third-party property management company to run housing out of the second and third floor is an option. We could just say, hey, let's intentionally make the space just a profit center for the church through affordable housing. That could be a theme. We could do sort of a hybrid, lease half the space to an outside organization, retain half that space, sort of do a modified version of what Flatlanders was like. We could lease the entire premises to an outside organization. And then if leaders emerged who were interested in doing something like the Flatlanders experiment, we could maybe move that off-site into a house or a home, sort of like the old Freedom House used to be, if you remember that era. Or, of course, I mean, hey, let's throw all the options on the table. We could just sell the entire church building and rent space in a school gym or a community center, which is, by the way, what most vineyards do. Hey, no $50,000 utility bill if you're renting a gym for $500 a month, right? So lots of options, lots of things on the table, and lots for us to consider and think about, Sean. So how do we evaluate, how do we discern, like what's the criteria, what are we thinking, what's going through our heads? Kingdom of God impact is the most important thing. Also, stewardship. Stewardship is a big theme for us. Stewardship of this building. This was a gift to us from God. Of course, impact on our WCV finances, stability of our church and sustainability of being in here. Alignment to the WCV vision, the mission and vision. The Holy Spirit's leading. I mean, prayer, discernment, words of knowledge from the board, the elders, the pastors, prayer and discernment, words from the prayer oversight team. Also, hey, leadership passion and commitment to champion whatever option we are going after. Is there someone, is there an elder who feels super called to run something or do something or and so forth? Probability of outcome. I mean, how realistic is it that whatever option we're going to pursue could be executed or implemented well? And of course, our own internal resources. You know, what internal resources pastorally and from leadership team are required and are available to see a particular option through? Sean? Other important considerations is to contextualize, like to take into context everything that we're going through right now. We have, you know, we all firmly believe in the leadership team that, you know, we're called to get additional pastoral resources. For example, we have 3 job postings out right now, as you're aware. I know we've all been told, and they're at the back, if you're still wondering what that's about. 3 postings for community care and development, unfolding hospitality, neighborhood engagement and outreach. Kids and youth has been a significant priority for us for several years now. And, I mean, of course, we have realistic a situation with aging infrastructure in our church. It's 20, 25 years old. Our systems are building systems, and we have an infrastructure deficit that we don't really have a plan for. 25% of our church building is actually undeveloped and unused, not doing anything for the kingdom. And then, of course, hey, we have a budget that's under tremendous pressure, big cuts last year, and year-to-date giving is actually below last year's levels. So I'm being asked, what's the rush here? And why the special attention to the proposal from Miller Bible College over, per se, other options? And just to say, the reason for that is that, first of all, there's an expiration date to the lease proposal from Miller Bible College. And, you know, no decision is a decision. Then there's the concept of kind of bird in the hand versus bird in the bush, right? I mean, we have, in terms of probability of outcome, that option from them, I mean, it's real, it's tangible, and it's in our hand to either take it or leave it. And the timeliness and the financial significance of their proposal, they do beg the question. The question in my mind is, is this provision? Or is it temptation? Of course, we want to go where the Lord's leading. Like, we don't, if the God's not in this, we don't want to be a part of it, right? Just say that outright and clear. If God's not a part of it, we don't want to pursue anything that, you know. But we are asking, is this provision right here, right now? Sean? Lots of questions. What about the existing tenants? I mean, whatever option we pursue, so with no leaders right now, by the end of June, whatever happens, we're just going to require wise and kindness and compassionate shepherding. If it Flatlanders discontinues, either if it's on-site if it goes off-site, the leadership team is committed to the best possible transition, and lots of work and prayer and working through that's going to have to happen, no matter what happens and how we move forward. There is $30,000 in the Flatlanders bank account. That is, that's money that was not intended to be absorbed into the church budget. It's money that, you know, it's theirs, it belongs to them, and it could be wisely dispersed in a way to help them, help tenants, help the transition. And like this issue, it requires sensitivity. I mean, it's an understatement to say that, you know, it's affecting people upstairs. That's an understatement. Like, this is very, very real and difficult, right? It'd be really, really sensitive. And so kind of moving faster to some sort of decision is kind of helpful in a way as well, right? Okay. Next steps. So what are the next steps here? March 1 to 7 sort of timeline is continued prayer and discernment. And March 7 to 10th is, you know, choosing whether or not to pursue a formal lease negotiation with Miller College. Or if we don't, then it's deciding to pursue and chase very diligently one of the other options. So that's where we're going. And just as an FYI, our AGM is April 19th. I put a plug in there, Sean. And so, yeah, so I want to just give you guys a chance. We'll do some clarifying questions. Like Rick said, we're not trying to get into a conversation about evaluating and hashing different things about the past and histories, but just to clarify any of this stuff. Okay, so Sarah had her hand up first. Yeah, so basically, that's a great question. We told them we just couldn't. We weren't there yet. We said we just weren't there yet. Sorry. Can you give us another 10 days, 2 weeks? And, you know, they said, okay, fine. But the problem with the deadline moving forward for them is, like, school starts in September, right? So there isn't, like, oh, take until May. No, that doesn't exist. It's like, guys, you know, just take it or leave it. And, you know, they're praying. We're all praying and so forth. Jordan. Yeah, so they would have students living upstairs. They would have their teaching going on upstairs as well. So they'd be using, you know, different rooms for, you know, their professors and whatever to speak and teach. They'd be cooking, living there. Some of the students would be probably commuter students that would drive in from, say, surrounding areas of Winnipeg or live in Winnipeg. But yeah, that's the idea, is they'd be living in this space as well. Yeah, go ahead. If the college lease, so if we decide to tell them no thank you, then the next option we're looking for is probably some type of version of, is if possible, to get leaders still from inside the church, but something that will use the space. Like, we got to have the space being utilized. I think we feel really uncomfortable about having space being unutilized, not serving the kingdom. And I think, you know, it's important as well that it does generate some level of income to at least replace what the church was getting from it at a minimum. So, yeah, a lot of work, but those have to be pursued. And probably would have to chase down maybe all of those other ones, because you don't know if any of them could become real or not. We just don't know. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, great question. So when we found out in December, we as a board and so forth, that we'd be leaderless in June, that started the, you know, the wheels spinning. Like, we got to do something. This kind of came out of nowhere as far as work. One day there was literally a text message in one of our meetings, and it was like, hey, would you be interested in talking to this group? And the next day they were here, and there was a tour, and things went very quickly. And things went very quickly to getting an actual hard proposal. As far as the other options go, yeah. So how do we learn more about that and process that more? I mean, good question. Now, as I said before, I mean, they're under maybe not publicly every Sunday morning, but for a long time, leaders have been sought for upstairs. And I guess if we decide that this is not the direction we want to go in, like, I don't even know how to that well answer your question, but it's going to take a lot of work and energy, and it's going to take, like, a champion of a lot of work and pursuing some of those things. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat that? Oh, a Canada-wide search. No, I don't believe we've ever done a Canada-wide search, and I believe that's been intentional, not from me or from anyone on necessarily on the board or whatever, but I don't believe we've done a national-wide search. I think the intention was to try and just find leaders from inside of this community, and that's definitely something that could be done. It could be done, for sure, if we wanted to go in and look at that kind of thing. I'm gonna go Amanda, and then Andre, and then, sorry. Go ahead. Have we considered the $30,000 as big P provision? We've always looked at the $30,000 as money that belongs to Flatlanders. So for example, it could be used by anything to do with them. So say, for example, could that 30 be used to invest in something, some other option or something like that? It could be. But what it hasn't been viewed at is something to just scoop and take and, oh, hey, listen, our year-to-date giving is down, so we're just going to grab some of that. None of that. Yeah, I would say, just honestly, I would say not really. You haven't really looked at it that way. I mean, I think if we said, well, let's just use that to fund the next 6-7 months of uncertainty, we probably would go through it pretty quick. But no, just to answer fairly, we haven't really looked at it in that way. Andre, and then we'll go Steve. Yeah, great question. So as pointed out, 25% of our building is unused. It's just sitting there. One of the challenges with that is in order for us to build it out, it would take, you know, a lot of money, and we'd have to actually get our building up to code. We have code problems with the city. It has to do with land drainage and things in our parking lot. We'd have to spend a lot of money there before we could even start on the fourth floor. The idea of, though, could we do both? Yeah, it's been talked about of, hey, saying, listen, look, there's not that many tenants there right now. Is there a way we could say, well, listen, we have some of this money, we could be a down payment on a fourplex, sixplex, and, you know, with operating income, we could literally continue to run this ministry off site if we had the leaders for it, and if we had people that really felt that they wanted to do that. We'd support. I mean, I don't see why that couldn't be done if we felt that was a thing that, you know, God was calling someone here who wants to say, yeah, they're going to lead that. We could be for that. In terms of having both simultaneously and developing the fourth floor, I mean, it's this the way that this proposal from Miller reads is that they need all the space, physically second and third. It would take probably a year or two before we could develop the fourth, money and so forth. Does it mean we couldn't do a transitional housing ministry in the future? Of course we could do it in the future if we felt led to and called and so forth and so forth. Stephen, and then we'll go to you back. Yeah, great question. So, I mean, obviously they're a Bible school and we're a church. Specifically, Rick and I have sat down with them and met with them and just talked about saying, hey, listen, look, if you're interested in moving into our building, you know, it's a little bit like a marriage in a sense. It's kind of like you're moving in together, and it's good to know like, hey, what are we getting into? So that's a great question. And I would say this, if we decide we want to pursue that option, that has to really get fleshed out some more between our leadership and theirs. But on a general high level approach, yeah, we've talked to them a little bit, and yeah, I mean, we're not identical. We don't have the same identical theologies and the way we do things, but they've told us, hey, listen, we're interested in learning from you. We want to have, you know, quote, their quote was, we want to be wearing lab coats. You've been here for 25 years. Like, what can you teach us about the North End and about like a ministry to the poor and ministry to the marginalized up here? It's interesting. I mean, they're a Bible college with, you know, really rural, a rural center in Saskatchewan, a rural center in BC, and they feel called by the Lord to have their newest campus in the inner city of an urban center like Winnipeg. They think this location is from the Lord, and they think they want to raise the next sort of generation of pastors, missionaries in this setting. They think that's important, which is, it kind of blows my mind, actually. It's remarkable. So, yeah. Thanks. Go ahead. Yeah, are they interested in doing 1 year and us making this? Yeah, so basically they'd like to have, you know, a first year try go at it because they don't want to, you know, lock themselves down to something that doesn't work. Of course, when you do that, that works both ways. That's the same for us. That gives us a year as well to see how it goes. And if we don't like it, we have the option, as much as they do, saying, you know what, this didn't work. We tried it. It didn't work. We don't have to do it. Correct. And then say that we did want to go ahead and it did work, then, you know, after whatever term, like, we don't, just because they proposed a 5-year term after that doesn't mean we have to agree to that. It's just that we're not going to go and have those conversations if we don't even think we should be going there. Good question. Okay, guys, you can talk to me after if you want. We do have to keep moving on, but just thank you for listening and letting us share. And you know, we try and not to operate in secrecy and so forth, but just want to share with you our thinking process. Sean? Yeah, thanks. Guys, we've been invited to this already many times, but send prophetic words, dreams, etc. to the prayer oversight team. There's Ange Falk's email or the church office, okay? Thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging in there. Appreciate it. Okay? Rick?
Thanks, Cornelius. I think if you've got kids, they're available. As long as you go and get your own children, okay? But in the meantime, while people are doing that, and I think the worship team's going to close out, maybe. But Krista has placed some of these papers and pens around, and I know there's lots of questions and we've taken a lot of time, but we really invite you, just if God is speaking to you and stirring something in you, the idea of having paper out here is just to write down, Lord, what are you inviting us into? Okay? So please, again, we wanted to give people opportunity for input and to hear from how the Spirit is guiding us. We really want to solicit that. That's really important, okay? Because we believe that God speaks to us as a family. So please, we're just, let me close in prayer and then we'll continue, okay? That's what the paper's for. Lord, we just pray for your mercy. We thank you for this building. We thank you for Flatlanders, and we thank you for our history, our present, and we thank you for our future. And we really need your Spirit to give us wisdom. So help us to move forward in grace and in truth to discern what our next step should be. Thank you so much, and we look forward to how you're going to guide us. In Jesus' name, amen.